Welcome to the Cello Sherpa podcast, where we explore all aspects of the climb to the summit from intermediate musician to the professional stage. Check us out online at thecellosherpa.com or follow us on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube at the Cello Sherpa. I'm Joel Dallow, your host. I joined the cello section of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in 1999 and founded the Riverside Chamber Players based in Roswell, Georgia in 2003. If you're looking for a bit of extra help on learning your orchestra or solo repertoire, perhaps we can help. Visit www.thecellosherpa.com and drop us a line. We offer virtual or in-person lessons. Today's episode is sponsored by Clear Resources, your premier resource for compliance, legal, ethics, and risk. For more information, visit them online at clearresources.com. In our last episode, we released part one of this fantastic conversation with performance coach Steve Toschen. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, I recommend starting with that episode before you listen to this one. Can you talk about, though, what qualities differ when you're helping someone achieve a high level of success that has a creative mind versus working with an athlete?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, it's more about how I change working with a creative versus a non-creative, because they're everywhere, Joel. The number of times, because I'm a musician, I can recognize a creative in an athlete, I can't even count the number of times.
Huh.
And I'm literally looking at an artist. I can see it. I can hear it. I can palpate it. And I treat that athlete with a different approach because it's clear they're a creative.
Okay.
100%. And what I'd say is it's about understanding what profile these creatives present to us.
Okay.
And an excellent author to look at in this area is Scott Barry Kaufman, psychologist. And he wrote a book called Wired to Create. Fantastic book. Fantastic book. But it's interesting because creatives can be equal parts ferocious teammate, and they can also be equal parts complete, distant, disconnected individuals and get misinterpreted as egotistical, selfish, unwilling, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But if you're recognizing what's in front of you, you'll interpret the behavior much, much differently. At times, what I've found is creatives are excellent at drifting into worlds they're creating in their brain. They create amazing sandboxes where they can just play with things that are completely unattached to reality. They can create different dimensions. They can see things in colors that we don't have any recollection of. They can just be in a space where they can become whatever they want or create a world in whatever characteristics they want. And they can play in there forever. I watch Marvel movies with my daughter all the time. We're huge into Marvel.
Yeah.
And as I'm watching these storylines unfold, as I'm watching the graphics and just the use of modern technology and how we create cinematic film nowadays, I consistently ask myself, how did they think of this? Yeah, but that's that creative mind working in this incredible sandbox. Here's the problem. When they're there, they are very disconnected from the world.
Okay.
They're disconnected from their family. They're disconnected from their teammates. They're disconnected from their other musicians. They're disconnected from their group. And they're operating on a different level where they just look like they're not interested.
Yeah.
But that's not what's happening. And then other times, when they've come back to the space, they're engaged in their art. They're engaged in their passion. All of a sudden, they're ferocious in their connections to other people.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible to see it on high levels. One of my favorite bands when I was young was, you know, Chick Corea's Electric Band.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away when I would watch them play. Monsters collectively, so connected to each other, so intuitively playing with each other, creating stuff that you can't write. There's no way you write it. It has to happen in the moment. Bruce Hornsby and the Noisemakers, I saw that group do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Just this incredible connected. Snarky Puppy, incredible band with this level of connectedness that was ferocious. But at any given time, an individual in their creative world, when they're not in the moment of performance, they can disconnect, and they almost have to, in order to consistently bring us these beautiful things that we hear or see in front of us, when they're finally able to take all this learning that they did in the sandbox and put it into something in front of us that's tangible, whether auditory, visual, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So understanding creatives is super important. And then what I would see is, I would see it in the way soccer players would create the things they did on the field, because none of it can be rehearsed.
Yeah.
Some of the things I'm seeing them pull off, they're just not capable of rehearsing any of that. It's that moment in time where they saw this in a different universe in their brain, and now they have the opportunity to work in this fourth dimension we've never seen, and they pull something off and everybody is left spellbound.
Yeah.
And they're thinking, what the hell did I just see? We saw Zlatan Ibrahimovic do it on the field, an incredible soccer player that has retired since. I've seen it in front of me with Novak Djokovic. We're watching him on the court, and we're thinking, how did he just do that? Uh-huh. Those elements are around us all the time. And I recognize early on as a coach that I'm more often than not, when you're dealing with exceptional talent, you're probably dealing with a creative in sport.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap up here a little bit and talk specifically about some pointers that maybe you could provide. So we talk a lot on this podcast about orchestral auditions, which we're talking about today too. It's really probably one of the most high pressure situations that we participate in. Of course, there's big competitions too, but that's a different animal and kind of outside of my experience. So it's really a straight up competition, but that first round typically lasts 5 to 8 minutes. So there's not a lot of time or room for error. Mm. When I was preparing for auditions, I read a ton of books about performing under pressure. Mm-hmm. They were all sports related,
yeah.
But that was 30 years ago. So there were definitely more books out there relating specifically to music. But it was all about mindset. It was about preparing yourself ahead of time before you go out on stage by how you look at the competition around you and finding that space within yourself so that you can perform at your best.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a heavy correlation between sports and music and what it takes to perform at our best. So Can you summarize maybe the best pointers that you think would help people in this situation? Because I think that's what a lot of people are looking for, is what are the top ways that I can really perform at my peak in 5 minutes or 6 minutes so that I can walk away and feel like I at least put my best foot forward?
Yeah. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
In these auditions, how much of the material is new during the audition, and how much of it did you have in preparation for the audition?
Generally, none of it is new. Everything you've been provided ahead of time. The one caveat to that is that there have been times where I would show up, there'd be a very long list of music. I would learn all of that music, but sometimes it might just say a full symphony or a certain movement of a symphony, and then they may decide on a moment's notice to pull out a passage that you weren't expecting, or pull out a passage that was something that's not that standard. So occasionally you're going to run into something that's maybe not as familiar, but on the whole, 99.5% of it is all well prepared ahead of time, and you know exactly what you're going to play, even to the point when you show up that day for the audition. They will tell you before each round, here's what you're going to play on stage in this order.
Right. So I'm going to get really, really deep with you here.
Okay.
Right? Because we've covered a lot, right? We've covered about how your process and your preparation creates predictability and how that predictability allows you to stay in a space of autopilot without distraction.
Okay.
And a lot of that is dependent on your outlook on what the expectations are. Right. If my expectation is about my process and my standard, execute my standard, I'm not going to focus on winning and losing. I'm going to focus on the execution of my standard. You make things really predictable, and you limit the amount of opportunities to disconnect you and distract you out of being an automatic. I will say that that's still for me is an incredibly important piece to dealing with stress.
Yeah.
Aspects of how we approach and deal with anxiety are very much guided by the automatic reactions and triggers we've collected over time to past experiences. Those can be music related, those can be non-music related. And I would say if you're an individual who finds yourself consistently winning or consistently losing, and in this particular case, let's lean on consistently losing, I think there is a very, very important aspect of your introspective journey that's going to lead to better results when it comes to audition. So I know this is not necessarily what you're looking for, but there's a great book called Brain Spotting by David Grand.
Okay.
And what this touches on is in any given circumstance, we will behave very consistently if we're triggered in a similar way. The two scenarios do not need to be similar, right? One can be how I respond to something that I hear from my partner. Another can be how I respond to what happens in an audition. If the trigger is the same, the reaction will be the same. And if the reaction is negative in one situation, it'll be negative in the other situation as well. The trigger will tap into our subconscious experience. It will tap into the subconscious way we respond in that given circumstance, regardless of whether the scenarios are the same or they're different. So long story short, understanding the trend line of your experiences, I would highly recommend being someone open to saying, this is deeper than just me reading a book about my mindset. I might need to deal with being comfortable with myself first. And I can't stress this enough, Joel, the number of times performance on the field for me with an athlete had nothing to do with their preparation. It's like, listen, like, you've got to deal with some stuff, man. And mental health is a big part of that.
Yeah.
And dealing with things that aren't necessarily about how many repetitions you put in your practice room, how many repetitions you put in on the field. Some of that has nothing to do with that. So first thing is look at the trends and address whether this is deeper than just your professional routine, right? That's super important. As it relates to things that will help you in the moment, for all of us, we want to be in a place where in any given circumstance, we just have optimal presence. You know, we're just aware and we're in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do. Past experience could lead into also the reasons why an individual has difficulty with staying present and staying in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Spending a lot of time understanding small coping mechanisms and coping strategies, whether it be mindfulness strategies, and just understanding the power of 10 really deep breaths is probably significantly underestimated. But when you're entering moments of something feeling unpredictable and anxiety is rising, you know, you do have to level set. Wait a minute, but what is this moment really? That takes a second to just put yourself in that place. Smell what the room smells like. Feel what it feels like barefoot on the floor, right? Get your hands on your instrument. This all feels familiar, right? Okay. I know what this moment is. I'm getting more of an understanding of what this moment is. That's important because the difficulty of dealing with high pressure situations is the amount of directions our mind can go in.
Yeah.
And it's scary the amount of directions our minds can go in, but it can't just be theoretical. So my advice to most people is make it tactile as quickly as possible. Don't just breathe. We all know taking 10 deep breaths helps us calm down, but it's not about that. It's how the moment connects us to where we are. So if I'm taking 10 deep breaths, I want to go visceral. Do I feel the air going into my lungs? Do I feel it passing the hairs in my nose? Like, am I taking the sensation of feeling the air pass through these passageways? That's a deeper way of getting to a place where nothing else matters. Why take off my shoes? Because once I feel the actual stage, this becomes real. My place, where I am right now, becomes tangible. It's theoretical until I can feel it. Right? And while you're taking deep breaths, while you're bringing yourself into this moment, reconnect yourself with the feeling of your instrument. Sure, I can put it on my shoulder if I'm a violinist. Yes, I can feel it between my thighs and in my hands as a cellist. But am I really connecting to the sensation that's super, super familiar to me, which is the way the strings feel on my fingers when I run my hands up and down them, the way the bow feels in my hands when I am or am not running it across the strings? Am I back bringing myself to a very, very familiar place, right? I would venture to say that in that position, bow in hand, is a very, very familiar place for you, Joel.
Yeah.
Bring yourself to a very familiar place, right? This is not an auditorium or a stage in front of people that are judging me, right?
Yeah.
If that's your mindset, good luck.
Yeah.
But instead, it's like, no, this is my feet on a stage, breathing air that's very familiar, with my hands on an instrument that is literally an extension of my body. This I can relate to. And in that place, you're present.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a different definition, because a lot of people poo-poo mindfulness and poo-poo awareness and presence, but you have to bring it down to the visceral level to people if you're truly going to understand why mindfulness practice is so effective.
Yeah.
Because again, just like we talked about making things predictable in your preparation, in the moment, you have to make things familiar so that you know where you are. Realistically, I'm not in a place of judgment.
Yeah.
Right? I'm right here on this chair, on this stage, with an extension of my body that I should be totally and completely comfortable with.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like, the breath comes easier, the heart rate drops, and the moment is what it is. It's a moment with me and my instrument. That's what this moment is. But it's hard to get there if you're constantly trying to theorize what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is not a theory. It's tactile. It's visceral. And if you can bring it to that level, all of a sudden your whole environment becomes super familiar.
That really makes sense and resonates strongly with me. I think what I'm hearing you say is, well, first of all, I practice mindfulness and it's very challenging to get my mind to focus. So being able to do that away from the instrument first and then with the instrument, have that same awareness and that same feeling of in the moment. Because that is really, I think, the hardest thing about taking an audition is you are completely in the moment. Mm-hmm. You're never more in the moment than you are in that moment. Mm-hmm. And that hyper awareness is very anxiety producing. And I think that the other thing that you touched on that's really important is that inner voice that we all have.
Right.
Retraining ourselves to stop the negative self-talk, because we're trained from our teachers that tell us everything that we do wrong to continue to think about everything that we do wrong. But you have to shift that when you go to this performance mindset to feeding yourself with all the positive input that you need about what's going right and focusing on that. And I think part of what I'm hearing you say too is that this mindfulness will help push the inside voice that is talking to you away, because you're focused on something that you really need to be focused on in the moment. And there's no room for that dialogue to get in your way.
Yeah. And I'll go back to it, Joel. You know, if an individual consistently has difficulty removing the negative direction that their brain goes in during quiet moments, there's still that the worthiness of exploring why.
Yes.
And it can be rooted in something deeper. Most creatives I've met, there is a greatness from their angst. And I don't want to minimize that. Some of the most beautiful art we've ever seen, whether it's paintings or whether it's music or whether it's composition, came from pain. It came from trauma, right? It's come from a place of difficult circumstances. Our struggle sometimes is the pathway to this beautiful artistic outcome. But in these moments, we're dealing with something different. You know, we're when you introduce judgment into a circumstance, you are introducing the diametrically opposed enemy of mindfulness, of presence.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is the most non-judgmental place a brain should go. That's the piece where I continue to say some of these evaluations, these introspective evaluations by individuals that listen to your podcast, individuals in your circle that deal with the pressures you deal with, some of that introspection should result in just a question of us asking, why do I consistently see a trend and I'm not able to overcome it myself, regardless of the books I've bought, the books I've read, the practices I've tried? Those point in the direction of us leaning on other people, you know, leaning on folks that can come into our world with us, and, you know, we give them access to space in a trusting way, and just, and like, you know, can they help us with this obstacle? I'll keep this short, but I equate a lot of this to what I see when I'm an engineer and I'm looking at a sound file. When we're trying to create a production, we want to produce an auditory sound. Our first move is not to boost frequencies we like. Our first move is to cut frequencies we feel are harsh. Uh-huh. And we've all been there. We remove just a couple of dBs from these frequencies, and then we re-listen to the sound file again, and we can't believe what we're hearing. It sounds louder, even though I haven't turned up the volume. It sounds fuller, even though I haven't boosted a single band of frequency. Our lives are like that. Our brain is like that. Our behavior is like that. Our spirit is like that. And in this circumstance, to make it relevant, when we discover obstacles that we're not able to remove ourselves and someone else helps us remove them, it's the old adage, you know, addition through subtraction. All of a sudden, our pathway to seeing new things, hearing new things, experiencing new things is cleared.
Yeah.
And even though we haven't added anything to our life or our thoughts, we experience things in a completely different way. It's extremely relevant in our world in high performance. Almost every circumstance I enter into, I don't ask what I should be adding to this circumstance. The first thing I ask is, what should I be removing first? And I get that from being a musician. I approach that in high performance within the corporate space, within the sporting space. I approach it that way from my life as a person who is trained to hear things first.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Was there anything else we might have missed that you'd like to share with our audience?
The only thing I'd say is everything we do as musicians eventually becomes a collaborative process. Uh-huh. You know, even if we're a singer-songwriter, soloist, like, we still have to have producers we trust. We still have to have managers we trust, sound people, engineers, road crew. There's still, it's a collaborative process. And I don't think we achieve a lot without understanding how powerful we are when we're connected. That being said, we are complex biological organisms. And complexity is a very difficult scenario to tackle by ourselves. I've always said, the more complicated a task gets, the greater likelihood we're going to fail by ourselves.
Yeah.
And in the end, we're dealing with our own complex biology. And as it relates to anxiety, as it relates to auditions, as it relates to dealing with high pressure, it's us, the human biological system, trying to deal with that anxiety. It's us, this complex biological organism, trying to deal with that pressure. So solving it on our own doesn't make a ton of sense. Uh-huh. The more and more complex any situation gets. Because most situations, you don't see where something's going to fail until it's placed under stress. That's the way complex biological systems work. Everything's going great, and you don't see any of the flaws until pressure is applied to the system. And then all of a sudden, it starts to break at all its weakest points.
Yeah.
Well, at any given time, as we're moving as individuals, we can either wait until we break and go, oh, crap. Or we can be a place where we just understand we're complex from the start and embrace the beauty of collaboration and the way in which it propels us to high performance. Now, that'd be the only thing I'd say is, in these worlds where we go into an audition and it's just me by myself, that doesn't mean I'm by myself.
Yeah.
It doesn't. My ability to deal with that moment as a complex biological system is dependent on, when I'm not by myself, I'm engaging in a collaborative process to move towards mastery with other people.
Yeah.
And that's something that we don't necessarily do for ourselves a whole lot.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Cello Sherpa podcast.
Oh, absolutely. If my podcast is right next to Yo-Yo Ma, I'm going to freak out. So I've been so impressed just listening to the podcast, I think I listened to, is it Carter Bray with the New York Philharmonic, yes, or is it Carrie? Carrie or Carter?
Carter Bray, yes. Oh,
that was brilliant podcast. And just being in and amongst the quality that I've heard so far on the podcast, like, I'm super humbled, man. This has been great.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much to Steve Toshchin for joining us today and sharing his story with us. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Cello Sherpa podcast. Be sure and catch our next episode where we interview cellist and social media star Ken Kubota. We talk about the incredible following he has created on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube by performing creative pop covers with classical musicians and playing his cello like a guitar. We're here to serve you. So if you have questions or topic suggestions you would like us to cover in future episodes, please use the contact page on our website, thecelloSherpa.com. You will also find information about the specific services we offer on the website. Don't forget to follow us and rate us on whatever platform you get your podcasts. This helps us climb the rankings so other people can find us. Today's episode was edited by Eric Begay at Red House Productions and produced and recorded by me, Joel Dallow.